The street outside 810 Billiards and Bowling in Houston was still lit when officers arrived a little after 2:30 a.m. on November 1, 2022. The calls had come fast. People were shouting about gunfire, a fight, and someone down. When police pushed through the crowd, they found a young man lying still on the ground, his face calm in a way that did not match the noise around him. Medics moved in, but there was nothing they could do. The victim was identified as Kirshnik Kari Ball, known everywhere as Takeoff. Within minutes, the scene shifted from confusion to shock. Witnesses spoke in uneven bursts. Some said there had been an argument. Others said Takeoff had been standing away from it. Officers marked shell casings. Lights from tall buildings traced the edges of the crowd. The question settled fast. How had a quiet night among familiar faces turned into the killing of an artist known for avoiding trouble? Chapter 1. The Night in Houston. The calls reached Houston police a little after 2:30 in the morning. Operators took the reports one after another. There was shouting in the background of each call. People said there had been gunfire at a private gathering near a downtown bowling venue. The location was a mixed area of nightlife spots, small lounges, and late-night food places. Officers were already close by due to an unrelated patrol. They moved toward the address without hesitation. When the first unit turned the corner, the lights from the nearby high-rises reflected across the street. A group of people stood gathered in a tight cluster. Some were on their phones, some looked frozen. The officers stepped out and gave clear commands for everyone to move aside. A few obeyed right away. Others stood there, stunned, unable to take in what had happened. Near the entrance, a man lay on the ground. He was still. His clothing was clean and untouched by any kind of struggle. His face looked peaceful in a way that felt wrong for the chaos around him. An officer radioed for medics and began securing the space. Another officer pushed the crowd back and asked if anyone knew what had happened. Voices came from different directions, each telling a slightly different version. A small group of witnesses said an argument had broken out near a dice game moments before. They said voices had risen sharply. They also said the man on the ground had not been part of it. He had been standing off to the side. Officers heard the same detail repeated by others. The argument had been between different people. The sound of gunfire followed almost instantly. Medics arrived and checked the victim. Their posture gave away the truth before they spoke. They informed police that the man had no signs of life. The officers secured the perimeter and requested additional units. As the crowd shifted back, a few people recognized the victim. One said his name quietly. Another gasped and covered her face. The officers listened carefully, aware that any identification at this stage needed verification. When detectives reached the location, they confirmed the victim was Kirshnik Kari Ball. He was widely known under the name Takeoff. The news spread among those at the scene before officials even made a public statement. Some witnesses grew emotional. Others stepped away and tried to gather themselves. It was clear the night had shifted from confusion to a moment that would echo far beyond the block. Detectives began working through the first hour with urgency. They asked officers to break the crowd into smaller groups. They needed to find out who had seen what. Many people said they had heard raised voices right before the shots. They described the moment as tense but brief. Some said they saw a dispute near the dice table. Others insisted the argument had barely started when gunfire erupted. The details were scattered and rushed. The detectives marked the ground where shell casings were found. Officers set up the yellow markers and photographed each position. It was clear that more than one shot had been fired. It was also clear that the angles might help later. The positions showed a spread that suggested movement. The detectives knew these clues would matter, but they also knew the early hours always held more questions than answers. They moved outward to trace the earlier part of the night. A private gathering had taken place following a larger event. People there described it as relaxed at first. Some were playing dice. Some were talking near the entrance. A few small groups stood near parked vehicles. Everyone remembered the atmosphere as easygoing until the argument began. They said it came from a small cluster of people near the dice table. They did not describe anything physical, only sharp voices. The victim, they said, was not involved. A detective took notes in a slow, steady rhythm. He asked each witness the same set of questions. Where were you standing? Who was near you? What did you hear first? What direction did the shots come from? Some gave partial answers. Others struggled to recall exact details. A few avoided eye contact and said they saw nothing at all. The detectives expected this. In scenes with dozens of people, memory often split into fragments. The detectives requested nearby patrol units to canvass the area. They wanted to know if any businesses had security cameras facing the street. They also wanted to check if anyone in the crowd had recorded the gathering before the gunfire. Officers door-to-door asking managers about their camera angles. Some businesses kept exterior footage, others kept only interior cameras. The detectives marked each location for later review. While the officers handled the surrounding area, the detectives focused again on the witnesses who had remained. The earliest accounts repeated the same pattern. There had been no sign of trouble during the night. People were relaxed and moving between conversations. Music played softly inside the building. Some people ate. Some talked about earlier events from the night. No one reported tension until the brief argument near the dice table. One witness pointed to a spot on the pavement and said the victim had been there, slightly behind someone else. He said takeoff had been quiet the whole night. He said the victim had not moved toward the argument or spoken to anyone involved. The detectives noted how often this detail came up. Nearly everyone said the same thing. The victim had been still and calm. The detectives kept their focus on gathering verified facts. They understood that consistency among witnesses could still contain errors. They needed as much information as possible before cross-checking. Inside the venue, the staff waited while detectives walked through the space. The room was already empty. Drinks sat unfinished on some tables. A few chairs were pushed back. The investigators confirmed that the shooting had happened outside the building. They looked through the windows to see the angle from which people inside might have witnessed the moment. Only a few seats had a line of sight to the exact place where the victim fell. Detectives then traced the movements earlier in the evening. People had arrived in small groups. Some left and returned later. Many said the gathering felt normal. They talked about music, work, and plans. The victim, they said, stayed close to a few people he knew well. They described him as quiet, observant, and respectful. He did not drink heavily. He did not argue with anyone. Several people repeated that he never appeared irritated or stressed. This detail stood out. As the first hour turned to the second, the detectives continued to expand the timeline. They matched the order in which people had entered and exited the building. They built a rough sequence of events. First, the larger event ended, then smaller groups moved to the private gathering. The dice table became a focal point. Conversations filled the air. At some point, tensions rose. The argument started. The shots followed. The crowd scattered. The victim fell. With the timeline set, the detectives looked again at the shell casings. They did not discuss conclusions on the spot. They simply recorded each detail. They took careful measurements from each casing to the curb. They documented the lighting conditions. They noted which overhead fixtures worked and which flickered. Every detail mattered in a case where moments could become contested later. Officers held the perimeter steady while detectives worked. Some people who had left earlier began to return. They seemed shaken. A few wanted to speak to the investigators. Detectives guided them aside and asked them to explain what they saw. These late arriving accounts were shorter. They added small details about the minutes before the gunfire. None changed the core facts that the victim was an unintended target who had been standing away from the argument. Around 4 a.m., the police chief received a briefing at headquarters. He directed detectives to gather as many statements as possible before the crowd dispersed completely. He also prepared for a press update. The gravity of the case required public communication. The victim was a well-known figure. The department needed to acknowledge what had happened with precision and respect. At the scene, detectives continued to ask witnesses for contact information. Many agreed, some hesitated, a few declined. The detectives noted each refusal, aware that cooperation often dropped after the first hours. It was important to record everything while people were present. A small team moved toward parked vehicles to look for additional evidence. They checked for stray casings, bullet marks, or damaged surfaces. They found nothing that altered the early understanding of the shooting. The evidence remained centered in one section of the pavement near the entrance. As the sky began to lighten, the detectives finished their initial sweep. They had collected physical evidence, they had taken statements, they had documented the positions of each casing, they had established a timeline. They had also confirmed that the victim had not been part of the argument that led to the gunfire. This fact would remain consistent in the days that followed. Officers briefed the next shift and prepared to clear the scene. Detectives planned their next steps. They would need to review footage from nearby cameras. They would need to follow up with witnesses who had agreed to speak again. They would need to examine the casings in the lab. But for now, they had completed the first essential stage. Later that morning, the police chief spoke publicly. He confirmed the victim's identity. He stated the department's commitment to uncovering the sequence of events that led to the shooting. He asked anyone with information to come forward. His tone was steady. He made it clear that the department recognized the loss and the weight it carried. Back at the precinct, detectives gathered in a conference room. They placed photos of the scene on a board. They outlined the timeline. They listed the known facts. They also wrote the main question at the top of the board. What exactly happened in the moments before the gunfire, and who was responsible? The detectives understood the pressure of the case. They also understood that the early hours were only the first step. They needed clear evidence, not assumptions. They needed to follow the facts, no matter how incomplete they felt in the beginning. The chapter of the night ended with silence in the precinct. The detectives looked at the board, aware that the next steps would demand even more precise work. They had the first pieces. They needed the rest. The investigation had begun. Chapter 2, Evidence, Forensics, and Witness Turns. The morning after the shooting, detectives returned to the precinct earlier than usual. They knew the second phase of the case would be slower and more detailed. They needed to form a clear picture of the victim's life, movements, and role in the gathering. They also needed to begin the technical work that would eventually point toward the direction of the shots and the people who had fired them. The early hours at the scene had confirmed what many suspected, but now the investigative process had to move from broad strokes to careful, documented steps. Detectives began with the victim profile. They compiled verified information about Takeoff's background. His real name was Kirshnik Kari Ball. He was known across the world as a member of the rap group Migos. He was recognized for being calm, thoughtful, and quiet. Many who worked with him often described him as the most reserved member of the group. He was rarely seen in the center of conflicts. He kept a low public profile outside of performances. Police needed this information because it helped establish context. It clarified that he was not someone known to escalate arguments or seek confrontation. It also helped them understand why witnesses had repeated that he had been standing to the side during the dispute. Detectives then moved into evidence intake. They brought in the shell casings collected from the scene. Each casing was bagged, labeled, and logged. The items were handed to the ballistics team. The team began the slow process of checking markings, caliber, and wear patterns. The detectives watched the intake but did not comment on the results. They knew that ballistics work takes time. They also knew that early conclusions needed confirmation before being included in reports. The casings represented one of the clearest paths to understanding how many shots were fired and from which directions. The team examined extractor and firing pin impressions. They noted differences in casing length and weight. These small details would later help indicate that more than one weapon had been used. While the lab team began their work, another group of detectives reviewed the footage collected from nearby businesses. Some cameras captured only the sidewalk. Others pointed at parking areas. A few showed small angles of the crowd before the gunfire. None captured the entire scene in one frame. Detectives expected this. It is rare for any one camera to provide a complete view. The detectives saved every clip and began aligning the timestamps. They matched shadows, lights, and reflections to confirm the correct order. They replayed the moments before the shooting. They watched people shifting positions. They watched groups forming and splitting. One angle showed the dice game, but from a distance. Another showed the entrance to the building. Most footage captured movement rather than faces. Detectives examined a sequence where people seemed to react to rising voices. They watched Quavo step forward during the tension. They watched others nearby turn their heads toward the argument. The victim was seen behind him. The footage confirmed that he was not engaged in the dispute. These visual details helped support the early statements from witnesses, but detectives treated them as only one layer of evidence. They still needed audio confirmation, physical evidence, and further interviews. In a separate room, another team reviewed videos posted publicly on social media. People at the gathering had recorded short clips before the shooting. Many of those clips had been shared online within hours of the incident. Detectives downloaded them and compared them with the official footage. Some recordings captured voices during the moments before the gunfire. In one clip, a person can be heard speaking in a tense tone. Another clip captured someone responding in a raised voice. None of the recordings showed the victim engaging in any argument. All showed him positioned slightly behind others. Detectives treated these clips as supplemental evidence. They used them to verify that the argument was not long or heated. It rose quickly and ended just as fast. Later that afternoon, the detectives returned to the board that displayed the timeline. They added details about the victim's position. They added the order of movement from the venue to the sidewalk. They also added the new evidence that suggested multiple shooters. The ballistics team confirmed that casings found at the scene came from more than one firearm. While the caliber could not confirm the identity of a shooter, it helped establish that the gunfire came from different angles. Detectives recorded this, aware it would become central in the days ahead. In the early afternoon, detectives began the second round of witness interviews. Many witnesses had left the scene quickly. Some had already flown out of Houston by the next morning. Others remained in the city and agreed to speak at the precinct. The detectives set up calm, steady interviews. They asked straightforward questions. Where were you standing? Who moved first? What words did you hear? Every detail mattered. Some witnesses said the argument was brief. They said it began near the dice table. Some said they heard someone make a frustrated remark. Others said they heard someone respond. A few described raised voices, but no physical altercation. These accounts aligned with the recordings discovered online. One of the detectives noticed a pattern. Witnesses consistently said the victim did not participate in the dice game and did not speak during the argument. These statements strengthened the understanding that Takeoff had been an unintended target. The detectives documented each line carefully. They noted which statements matched and which ones did not. They also noted that some witnesses hesitated. They repeated that people scattered quickly. They said the moment unfolded faster than anyone expected. Late in the afternoon, the detectives met with the police chief to provide an update. They explained the difficulty in gathering full cooperation. Many people at the scene did not want to be involved. Some feared public attention. Others did not want to speak about anything related to a shooting. The police chief understood this challenge. He directed the department to prepare a public plea. He wanted to encourage anyone who knew something to come forward. He knew that many cases move slowly without cooperation. He also understood the high-profile nature of the victim. The public plea went out that evening during a press update. The chief asked for video, audio, or eyewitness testimony. He made it clear that the victim was not involved in any dispute. Back inside the precinct, the detectives focused on digital evidence. They reviewed phone records associated with the people known to have been near the argument. They looked for messages or calls that might explain the tone of the moments before the gunfire. They found nothing that showed a planned conflict. They found casual conversations about the event earlier in the evening. They found nothing that linked the victim to any dispute. This strengthened the early conclusion that he had been standing peacefully in the group. Another detail emerged from the digital review. One video captured the sound of several shots. The audio waveforms showed different patterns. This supported the ballistics finding that more than one weapon had been fired. Detectives added this to the board. They wrote a simple line, multiple shooters. They did not draw conclusions beyond that. They waited for the ballistics team to finish its analysis before linking casings to specific weapons. By the third day, the detectives began examining trajectory lines based on the positions of the casings. They used photos from the scene and laser measurements taken earlier. They mapped the angles across the pavement. Some lines pointed toward the group near the argument. Others pointed slightly to the side. These measurements did not identify a shooter on their own, but they formed a pattern. They suggested that the gunfire came from people within the crowd rather than from outside the group. Detectives placed this information into their report. They remained careful with wording. They noted that trajectories can shift if casings move after landing. They documented each limitation. Throughout the week, they continued to interview people who had been at the gathering. Some gave new details. One person said they saw someone step back quickly after the first shot. Another said they saw someone raise their hand. A third said they heard someone yell for people to move. Each account was short and incomplete, but together they filled in small gaps. None contradicted the central fact that the victim was not in the argument. The detectives then examined statements made by venue staff. Employees said the atmosphere inside the building had been calm before the group moved outside. They confirmed that the victim had been inside earlier, but had remained quiet. They did not recall any disputes. They said the group seemed relaxed. They described the movement from inside to outside as normal. There was no sign of tension before the shift to the sidewalk area. The detectives also reviewed police body camera footage. The footage captured the early minutes after officers arrived. It showed the crowd stepping back. It showed the victim on the ground. It showed officers spreading out to secure the area. It also captured small fragments of voices in the background. Detectives listened closely. The voices reflected confusion and shock. They did not provide new details about the shooters. Still, the footage helped document the initial condition of the scene. It showed where people were standing after the event. It showed items on the ground. It allowed detectives to confirm that no evidence had been moved before the markers were placed. Toward the end of the week, the ballistics team delivered a preliminary report. It confirmed that casings from the scene came from more than one firearm. It did not identify the specific weapons. It explained the caliber and markings. It described how the impressions on the casings suggested different firearms. It left open the question of which weapon fired the fatal shot. Detectives added a note to the board. They needed clearer footage or new evidence to narrow down the source. The detectives then compared the physical evidence with the witness statements. The position of the casings matched the descriptions of where people had been standing. Several witnesses had said they saw people move quickly after the shots. The casings appeared clustered in two areas. This suggested two shooters. Detectives marked the areas with colored pins on the board. They used red for one group and blue for the other. They acknowledged that the board was only a working model. It represented possibilities rather than final answers. By the end of the week, the detectives had built a detailed timeline. They started with the larger event that preceded the gathering. They mapped the time people arrived at the private gathering. They identified when the dice game began. They identified the moment when tensions rose. They aligned the audio from public videos with the frames from security footage. They placed the victim in his position. They connected each fact with an anchor point to avoid errors. Even with all the progress, they still faced one central challenge. The cooperation rate among witnesses remained low. Some people refused to return calls. Others stated they did not want to be involved. The detectives documented these refusals, but continued asking for help. They understood that many cases reach a turning point only when a key witness steps forward or clear footage emerges. They knew they needed both patience and persistence. At the next meeting with the police chief, the detectives explained that they had built a strong factual foundation. They had the profile. They had early trajectories. They had ballistics indicators. They had verified that the victim had been an innocent bystander. They had a working timeline. They had the locations of casings. What they did not have yet was a clear identification of who fired the fatal shot. That would require sharper footage, or a breakthrough from the lab. The chief listened and nodded. He told them to continue their work. He said the community wanted clear answers. He said the department had a responsibility to provide them. He asked detectives to stay focused on evidence and avoid pressure from outside voices. The detectives returned to their desks and reviewed the footage again. They studied movement patterns. They looked for hand motions, clothing shifts, or reactions from people near the argument. They used software to stabilize frames. They used enhancement tools to clarify shadows. They replayed the audio to match it with the frame count. One frame showed a person stepping back sharply. Another frame showed a faint flash. Detectives circled both images. They needed to link them with other angles. They continued reviewing the footage until late into the night. They concluded the second phase of work with one central question. With incomplete cooperation from witnesses, could they identify who fired the fatal shot? The evidence pointed in a direction, but they still needed the break. That break would come in the next chapter of the case. Chapter 3: The Break, the Arrest, and the Aftermath. The second week of the investigation opened with a familiar rhythm. Detectives returned to the footage that had already been examined dozens of times. They knew that the break they needed would likely come from a detail hidden in the angles they had not yet compared side by side. They also knew that the lab work on the casings would soon move from preliminary findings to deeper analysis. Both paths had the potential to shift the case. On a quiet morning inside the precinct, two detectives sat across from each other with separate screens. They watched a slowed clip that had been stabilized the night before. The frame showed a group of people shifting backward at the first sound of raised voices. One man in the group took a step that seemed sharper than the others. His movement stood out. The detectives paused the video and compared it with another angle from farther down the block. That second angle showed the same man turning his upper body during the moment before the gunfire. The footage was not clear enough to draw conclusions, but the movement pattern was distinct. The detectives marked the timestamp and logged the frame numbers. They brought the clips to their supervisor. The supervisor approved a full sequence comparison. The goal was to determine whether the movement matched the cluster of casings that had been collected from one side of the scene. If the trajectory lines from the ballistics team aligned with this position, it could create a new direction for the investigation. Later that afternoon, the ballistics team delivered updated findings. They confirmed that one of the weapons used in the shooting had left a distinctive mark on the casings. The pattern of the firing pin impression was clear enough to be unique among the casings found at the scene. The team also confirmed that this firearm had discharged multiple rounds. Another firearm had fired at least one round. The detectives took the report and matched the casing positions with the body movements seen on the footage. One lead emerged steadily. The position of the man who had taken the sharp backward step matched the area where the unique casings had been found. This did not identify him as the shooter, but it aligned with the idea that he may have been close to one of the weapons. Detectives still needed more evidence before making a move. They continued reviewing footage from the venue, the street, and the videos uploaded online by people who had attended the gathering. As the days passed, a few new witnesses came forward. Some offered small details they had been unsure about earlier. One described seeing someone hold their arm out at the moment of the first shot. Another described hearing a voice that was familiar to them. These details were not enough to confirm anything alone, but they helped create a fuller picture. The detectives wrote each new statement on the board. They placed it below the earlier entries and checked whether any new information contradicted the timeline. None did. At the end of the week, detectives received word that the lab had processed additional digital evidence. Analysts had enhanced several frames from public videos. The enhanced frames showed a clearer outline of one person's movement during the gunfire. The detectives compared the outline with the positions mapped on the timeline. The outline matched the same individual whose movement had stood out in earlier footage. This created the strongest lead of the investigation so far. The detectives met with supervisors and reviewed the compiled evidence. They did not draw conclusions aloud. They listed each point on a whiteboard. They wrote down the trajectory lines from the casings. They wrote down the digital timestamps. They wrote down the positions from the enhanced footage. They listed the witness accounts that mentioned a similar movement pattern. When the board was full, they stepped back and looked at the pattern. The evidence did not show intention or motive. It did not reveal the full sequence of events, but it showed a strong link between one individual's position, the casings, and the angles. By the end of November, the detectives moved their focus to a man named Patrick Xavier Clark. He had been identified through witness interviews and through the movement pattern found in the footage. Detectives continued working quietly. They did not release details to the public. They built a final package of evidence. They prepared the documents needed for an arrest warrant. The official review process took time. They understood the scrutiny the case would receive. They needed to ensure that every fact had been verified. On a December evening in 2022, detectives made the arrest. Patrick Xavier Clark was taken into custody in Houston. The department announced the arrest shortly after. They confirmed that he had been charged in connection with the shooting. During the press briefing, police stated clearly that Takeoff had been an innocent bystander. They repeated that he had not been involved in the argument. They explained that the evidence allowed them to identify Clark as the person who fired the fatal shot. They also confirmed that the investigation had required careful analysis of video, ballistic evidence, and witness statements. Clark's legal filings entered public record days later. They included information about the ballistics match and details from the warrant. Court documents also noted that bond was set at a high amount due to the seriousness of the case and the evidence presented. These filings provided verified information, but did not include conclusions about guilt or motive. The legal process was ongoing. Detectives remained focused on the evidence they had collected and the steps they had taken. They did not speak publicly about the case beyond the facts allowed by the department. In the days following the arrest, the city reacted with a mixture of relief and continued grief. The music community expressed sadness over the circumstances surrounding the killing. Many artists acknowledged Takeoff's quiet character and his contributions to the industry. Fans across the world shared messages of sympathy. Public gatherings were held in several cities. People spoke about how his death felt senseless. They highlighted his reputation for calm behavior and for staying out of disputes. Detectives, while aware of the public reaction, continued working on the official case materials. They finalized the sequence of events that led to the arrest. They prepared the evidence logs for court. They reviewed the chain of custody for each item. They confirmed that each digital file had been archived with timestamps. They ensured that the ballistics reports had been reviewed by multiple analysts. They checked that the witness interviews had been transcribed accurately. The department also reviewed the investigative steps taken during the early hours. This review is common in high-profile cases. It helps the department understand what worked well and what could be improved. Supervisors noted that the early response was handled quickly and with clear communication. They acknowledged the difficulty caused by limited cooperation among witnesses. They pointed to the importance of digital evidence and surveillance footage. They also noted that the detectives maintained steady focus on verified facts and avoided assumptions. As the legal process moved forward, public attention shifted toward the court system. Attorneys reviewed evidence, hearings were scheduled, court documents continued to confirm the facts that had already been reported. The department remained firm in its communication. They did not speculate. They stated only verified information. They reminded the public that the case was ongoing. They emphasized the victim's innocence in the moments leading up to the shooting. During this period, members of the victim's family released statements that expressed gratitude for the support they had received. They acknowledged the pain of the loss. They asked for continued privacy and respect. They also thanked the public for honoring Takeoff's memory. Their statements were steady and dignified. They reflected the tone the family had carried since the incident. In the music world, colleagues continued to speak about Takeoff's influence. Some mentioned his skill as a performer. Others spoke about his personality. Many highlighted that he had often been described as humble and focused. Several artists who had worked with him said they found it difficult to understand how someone known for calm presence could be caught in such a moment. Their comments echoed the central fact of the investigation. Takeoff had been standing quietly when the gunfire began. As weeks passed, the detectives completed their final tasks on the case. They archived the photos, videos, and notes. They closed out the daily logs. They ensured that the case file was complete for prosecutors. The detectives understood that their phase of the work was reaching its end. The next steps belonged to the courts. Still, they reflected on the core questions that often remain in cases like this. How does a brief dispute escalate into gunfire? How does a quiet person become a casualty of a moment he had no part in? How does a community process the loss of someone who brought joy to so many? These questions had no simple answers. The detectives wrote a final line in their internal summary. It read, "The victim was an innocent bystander." This line had guided their work from the beginning. It shaped the scope of the investigation. It remained consistent through every phase of evidence review. It became the foundation of the department's public statements. It also reflected the core truth that the investigation had confirmed. When the detectives met one last time to review the file, they looked at the board one more time. The arrows, lines, and timestamps that had filled the board for weeks were now part of a completed timeline. The casings had been matched. The footage had been analyzed. The arrest had been made. The questions about the shooting had been answered to the degree that evidence allowed. What remained were the legal decisions that would unfold in the months ahead. The chapter of the investigation closed quietly. The precinct lights were low. Detectives gathered their notes and shut down their screens. They did not feel closure. Cases involving public figures often carry long shadows. The grief of families and communities continues long after the investigative work ends. The detectives understood this. They stepped out onto the street outside the precinct and took in the quiet of the night. The final question lingered in the air. What does justice look like when a beloved public figure is killed as an unintended target? The investigation had answered the factual questions. The community would answer the emotional ones. The legal system would answer the final ones. For now, the detectives had done their part. Their work stood on the record. The rest would take its course.